バラすわよ。おばにえらごらままけりらいを。
Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black Arts and Culture program with the African Sisters Media Network. This morning we are going to be having a special broadcast featuring a few of the artists that are part of Afro Solo's 22nd anniversary of its Black Voices performance series, Our Stories, Our Lives, which is August 26th through 28th in San Francisco at the Barrio Clay Theater, which is located within the African American Art and Culture Complex. And I see everyone is on time. We have Aquila M. Lewis, who will perform Saving Black Lives One Word at a Time. Luna Malbro, who will perform Laughter is the Best Weapon. And Thomas Robert Simpson, who is no stranger to the airwaves, who will perform Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett, The Man, His Life, and the Street Named After Him. So I want to welcome everyone into the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Quite welcome. So, Thomas, I guess we'll start with you. And you were telling us a little bit about your piece when we had you on talking, you know, with, I guess, with Linda, talking about the concert. And how was the concert?
The concert was absolutely fabulous. You would have loved being there. Linda did an absolute job as a vocalist, singing some new songs as well as some old standards from Abby Lincoln's Throw It Away to Nina Simone's Young, Gifted, and Black. We had a really nice crowd, so it was a superb way to kick off the 22nd Afro Solo Arts Festival.
Yeah, and then Miss Tammy Hall, how was her
Tammy,
performance?
Oh, my God, how could I forget my Tammy? Tammy was just marvelous. You know, Tammy is a pianist extraordinaire, and she works with a lot of vocalists, but she's also begun to do her own work and have her own solo career as a pianist. I heard Tammy sing. She doesn't often sing. Heard her sing. She has a wonderful voice. And she brought four people to a vocalist to work with her. They're harmonizing the work that they did, especially around honoring people who had been killed by police, was something to behold.
Nice, nice. Yeah, well, that's great. So you are going to be having a tribute honoring Dr. Goodlett's contribution as a physician, psychologist, newspaper publisher, political activist, and civil rights leader in San Francisco, and let you tell us about him. Particularly, I'm sure people have seen the street in front of San Francisco City Hall is named after him, but they probably don't know who is this Mr. You know, Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett. So that's going to be really exciting, you know, seeing this piece that you've developed around his legacy. And Luna, how do you pronounce your last name? Did I?
Oh, sorry. No, I've lost you for a second. My last name is pronounced Malbro.
Malbro. Okay, cool. Malbro. And you are a writer and a comic that uses humor and dialogue to explore social issues. You are the creator of Equitable app, a producer of comedy shows in the Bay Area, and you have been identified as KQED by KQED as a woman to watch. Your work has been featured in news publications all over the world, from the Washington Post to China News Daily, and you have a master's degree from Columbia. You're a regularly featured speaker at conferences, workplaces, and schools on topics surrounding inclusion and diversity. Ah, so welcome, Luna. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And then Sister Aquila M. Lewis, oh, you are such a superstar. your performance is Saving Black Lives One Word at a Time. You're a spoken word performance artist exploring the here and now in black life. The last time I saw you, you were a model in this really beautiful garment. Tell us about your work as a model.
Yes, it's so great to hear you, and I hope to see you again soon, Ms. Wanda. Things have been amazing in my life. I just really, I'm really grateful and thankful for the opportunities and also for the struggle, because it definitely has helped me put together all the different writing materials and theater experiences and everything that I'm doing. So modeling, that started because I was trying to uplift myself and build the self-esteem. Being a person of size, plus size, is not always fun. You know, people really do have an opinion about the way people that are over, what, I guess plus size is size 10 now or something like that. I really don't know. people really do have an opinion about what they think is beauty, what they think is, you know, should be accepted. And I have had some issues with body esteem issues, and not because I had it for myself, but because other people made comments about different things. And, you know, sometimes we internalize it, and I wanted to kind of like rewrite the story of the body story. And so I've just been doing modeling, I think, ever since, what was it, 2011, I think. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you all were looking really fabulous in those designs. Yeah, could you tell us, you know, some of the designers whose work you, you know, you wear in the various shows you've been in?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like the one I saw you in.
I definitely can do that. One particular designer who is a mover and shaker, I've had opportunities to interview her as well, Miss Yolanda Yanetta. She is the founder of Big Old Pretty Girls, and it's that's the name of it. It's a really amazing platform, uplifting women, but it's not just for women. She has a line for men and children. She's known for her fashion shows. The sizes are size 0 to 30. And she has an amazing fashion show in March, usually around Women's History Month, that everybody that she represents can participate. And she also does fashion shows throughout the year, and has her clothing line is at G&M clothing, G&M store, G&M Co, apologize, at the Bayfair Mall in San Leandro. The reason why I know about her so much is because I actually got a chance to go and kind of be like a promo model at the Art and Soul Festival that we just had this last weekend. And then there are so many other designers, Sebastian Threads. We have Divas Exquisite Designs. There's so many different ones that I'm able to wear their clothing lines, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, they have something for my size 16. I'm not ashamed of it. Size 16, XL to 2X, and it, you know, they're sexy clothes. They're beautiful clothes. They represent something. They have a storyline, and I'm able to to kind of like fit into it. So I appreciate that.
Well, that's interesting. They have a storyline, and you can fit into their storyline. Interesting.
I think so.
So what are you wearing this weekend? Are you going to wear a different outfit, you know, one Friday, one Saturday, one Sunday, or?
Well, you know what? I am actually going to be wearing different outfit, different items that goes with the poems that I'm performing. And it just, a lot of this stuff just came out of my mind. I was asleep, woke me up. I had, you know, sometimes I have dreams about the outfits that I wear. And then since I'm a poet, I kind of like combine those different stories, you know, and make it into a character sort of kind of. And so that's kind of like what I'm going to do on for all three of the days.
Well, that's very interesting to hear, and it makes a lot of sense because we had a couple of emails together where Aquila told me that she's going to be having some changes, clothing changes during her set, and it makes so much sense. And I wonder, Aquila, if you're going to be changing, and as you said, your outfit is going to be a character as part of the poems that you will be reciting or performing.
Uh-huh.
And do you have specific designers that you will be using to help tell those stories?
Sort of.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great. This just gives a different angle on you as a performance artist. And it's making
right.
me think more about the designers. You know, maybe there may be some future for Afro Solo and with clothing designers, which I hadn't thought about. Because I hear you say that it's a form of art. It's a form of telling a story, which
mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought about in those terms. So fantastic.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm always trying to figure out like how to make myself make sense because I'm a multi-genre artist, and I've always had a hard time just sticking to one genre. And
well,
so,
I'm actually,
you know, it has to make sense for myself.
I'm actually a little bit older than you, probably by a few decades. And trust me, even us older folks sometimes are still trying to figure out what makes sense for us.
Yeah. So, Clea, let me finish letting our audience know a little bit more about you. I just wanted to hear about, you know, the fashion design part because you were just simply marvelous.
Thank you.
Yeah. All the models, you all look so beautiful. You are, as you mentioned, multi-genre, and you're an award-winning, multi-talented writer, performing artist, and journalist. You're also immersed in hip-hop culture as executive producer and radio host of All the Rest of Us, Sideshow,
mm-hmm.
and After Hours Radio on KPFA 94.1 FM. You are a graduate of Napa Valley College in UC Berkeley, and for 10 years you've served as entertainment chair for the annual Empowering Women of Color Conference at UC Berkeley, and that's a really wonderful program. So since we are talking to you, Aquila, we might as well continue, and then we're going to shift back to Luna and let her tell us about laughter and her work, because I'm really interested in Edward Table app and you know, how she was, you know, featured in all these publications like China Daily News or China News Daily, like, interesting. So tell us about Saving Black Lives One Word at a Time. What have you pulled together here for us?
Well, without revealing too much, because I like to, like, you know, blast it out right there on the show. But my life is a story, and a lot of it is intertwined with tragedy and pain and a lot of things. But similar to a lot of stories of people of color. And for me, the way I've been able to heal and cope have been through writing poetry, and then discovering that I can also combine the words with the other multi genres that I'm a part of. And so I'm kind of gonna tell a story of what it's like being a woman of color, being a black woman, and you know, just how I have shown how my life matters. And so that's one way that I'm going to kind of reveal what the word One Word at a Time is all about. And then also other people that I've interacted along my journey, along my path, I'm going to be telling their story through the poetry. So, man, it's going to be exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I saw you as a part of, you're in a film, and mm-hmm. it's been a minute, and the film was looking at survivors. I was wondering, I don't know, would that mess up sort of what you're going to share?
No.
To tell our survivor what?
Actually, no, it will not mess up what I'm going to reveal and share. So, yes, I am a survivor of child sexual abuse and other sexual violences. And I am one of the cast members of You and Me and the Fruit Trees, which is a documentary that follows four adults who were abused as children. And I've been featured and followed around all over the Bay Area for the last 5 years. And I think the documentary is almost done. We're trying to kind of make sense in chronological order, all the different things that I've been through since 5 years ago. And that is also another healing mechanism for me. And I've been seeking ways that I can heal and then also teach others how they can heal themselves and help their families and communities. So that's a little bit of what You and Me and the Fruit Trees is about.
Yeah. So make sure you keep me posted, because I definitely want to see, see the feature once it's ready and have you all on to talk about it, because it's a really wonderful work. Tell us the director's name.
Her name is Tracy Quesada. Yeah, and she's a filmmaker in the Bay Area, who is really interested and passionate about this topic because. She kind of had someone in her family who also was affected by child sexual abuse, and so she wanted to tell her story. And I met Tracy through the Women's Initiative for Self-Employment. It's a different name now, but it was a class for women who are interested in learning how to put together a business. And so we were in that class together, and we were revealing all the different ideas that we had for our business plan. And she told us that, you know, this was what she wanted to focus on. And I came to her and I said, hey, this is all about me. I want to do this with you. And so we've been connected ever since. I think that was 2009 when we first met. And then we started filming in 2011. So, it's been great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I guess our audience can tell I know a little bit about Aquila. and then we'll definitely, you know, have another go around. Perhaps maybe you could, while we're talking to Luna and Thomas, you could pull up a poem that you can share that's not a part of your program, Saving Black Lives One Word at a Time. But lastly,
sure.
I wanted to ask you in this part of our conversation, if you could talk a little bit about, you've got, and I think you're the first person that I've ever, like, talked to but you have you have like a Black Poetry Erotic series, and you host it, I think. I don't know if you still do or not. And I thought that was pretty cool. So tell us about that, and let us know if you're still hosting readings and things like that, and why Black Erotica, and because I know Opal Palmadisa, she edited a really wonderful anthology on the topic, and you know, it's like really nice, you know. The book. Yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get that information because I don't think I know her.
Oh, Opal Palmer-Adisa. Oh, she. I don't know if she's still at California College of the Arts. Used to be Arts and Crafts, but she was a tenure professor there. She's a Caribbean woman, a Jamaican, and she's got a daughter that's in Paris, you know, who's got a Black tour company. she's got another daughter, and she's got a son. Yeah, but she goes between here, Oakland, and the Caribbean and elsewhere,
right,
I'm sure.
Right.
But, yeah.
Thomas,
you know Oprah, right?
She's in the loom of Afro Solo. So, yes, she's she's been in Afro Solo. She was in Afro Solo several times.
Wow.
Yeah, and she's also doing photography now. So, but anyway, back to the question about, you know, the Black Erotica series.
Sure, sure. Lots of time really knows how to evolve and change things and make things better. But I kind of started poetry when I was in high school, and a lot of it was because I was having an issue expressing how I felt with someone that I really cared about. And so I just started writing it down pretty much. And then I challenged myself in 2010 to step out and go to the open mics and do spoken word. And so I discovered that I really am a poet that likes to write about the personal things, the things that people don't like to talk about, uncomfortable, and romance, love, erotic. I feel really comfortable in that arena because it's just, it kind of reveals who I am. I'm a Libra Scorpio. I don't know if anybody knows anything about those signs, but they're very passionate love signs. it feels great for me to be able, it feels freeing to be able to get it out and just write it and then share it and express it through poetry and performance. The showcase that you're talking about, I think it was Sexy Sundays. That was a platform that was created by someone who's passed on. Let's see, maybe about 4 years ago. I can't remember, but he actually saw me. His name was Stretch. Excuse me, Eric Wright Stretch. He actually saw me perform at an open mic, and he said, hey, I want you to be part of this. And then I actually started assisting him with the showcases. That's kind of like how I got involved with that. And then because my life started changing and a lot of different tragedies with my grandma's foreclosure and a lot of other stuff in life, I had to stop, you know, working on the showcase and really started working on the personal, myself personally. But now I am interested in getting back into doing hosting and curating with organizations who are like-minded, not just on erotic or love, but, you know, I'm really passionate about everything that's happening in the world that affects us and ways that we have to heal ourselves and heal our communities. Whether it be a revolutionary or whether it be just like, you know, just writing it out, that's kind of revolutionary sometimes because you're dealing with the issue at that moment. So I'm really trying to explore.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Tina. Luna, tell us about Laughter is the Best Weapon. How is laughter the best weapon? And how did you come to that conclusion and start arming yourself with laughter?
Oh, man. Well, sometimes laughter is the only coping mechanism you have. Sometimes you find yourself in a place where, you know, all you can do is just kind of use humor as a tool to make light of everything. And I think, you know, being a stand-up comic and being someone who has actually a background in social work, I'm well aware of, like, the resiliency and the history of Black folks and how we have continued to use humor throughout time to be a way to help us heal and help us cope with things and help us, you know, deal with things that are very real and sometimes really hard to manage during the day. And so I think we've all seen in stand-up comedy how really Black stand-up comedy and Black comics have really kind of led the way in that and using that. And so kind of why I titled my set Laughter is the Best Medicine is because over this past year is when I've, with a group of people at a comedy competition, first developed Equitable. And the concept, for anyone who's new to it, but the concept is a comedic app, right? That was the goal, is to create a comedic app. And that I thought going into the competition, I've been hearing so much about the wage gap. You know, I hear so much about how women earn 77 cents to the dollar, right? But I know that as a Black woman, I'm left out of that. And I know even when we look at the wage gap, Black men and Latino men are also left out of this conversation. And so what I wanted to do was start a conversation about how race coupled with gender actually affects the wage gap. And so the app that I created was called Equitable, in which when you put in your demographic, your race and your gender, and you would go out with a group of people, and it will actually tell you, based on your race and gender, using the calculations of the U.S. Bureau of Labor, how much you end up paying. So basically, if me, a Black woman, were to go eat with a white man, I would only pay 64% of the bill because I'm only getting 64% of the U.S. dollar on what I'm making. So it was a way to humorously kind of take on a very serious issue of the wage gap. And that's kind of how I ended up it kind of took on in the press. And it was something that really struck a chord with people, I think, around the world. I ended up, you know, being on shows in New Zealand and Canada, and, you know, even China News Daily wrote about it. But I think it really struck a chord, like this idea that you could do something in a different way. You can attack a problem in a different way. And I did that using humor. And so I saw how advantageous humor was kind of get to a point versus lecturing on the wage gap. Seriously.
Yeah, and I just noticed, looking at your website, that I just missed Summer of Love Comedy and Arts Festival because it just closed on August 18th. I'm like, oh, I could have got a little preview. That would have been nice. So tell us about the Comedy and Arts Festival Summer of Lust, the Best of the Bay that just closed. It was August 7th through 18th.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was really amazing. It was an amazing experience. So I do a comedy talk show here in the Bay Area all around sexuality called Live Sex, and it's about consent culture generally, and I bring on different sex and relationship experts, and I have them talk to comics. And in doing this show over the past year, I really stumbled upon so many people here in the Bay Area, so many artists that are exploring sexuality, exploring identity, really, you know, bringing people together. There's a strong burlesque community here in the Bay Area. So I partnered with all of them, and I produced my first festival this summer, which was great, the Summer of Lust Festival. It was a great success. We had sponsorship from Green Apple Books and Good Vibrations, and we're talking about doing it again next year, which is really exciting. But it featured, I think, one of my favorite acts was a one-woman show, Sandra Risser, who's a comedian. She's 74 years old, and she did a one-woman show called Miss Your Ex. It really talked about her love life and the things that she learned throughout her life. And that's just one example of the kind of shows that we had in the festival. But it was really good. And definitely, I'll make sure that you hear about it next year when we're gearing up for next summer.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I actually know Sandra.
Oh, awesome.
She's good.
She's good people.
Yeah.
She's great.
Wow, that's really awesome. Let's see. Yeah, I think Thomas is on another line. Let me see if I can mute his mic. Yeah, I did. Okay. Tell us, you mentioned in your bio you just told us that your background is social work, which is sounds like you probably have a lot of great material. But you've you've also you're a regularly featured speaker at conferences, workplaces, and schools on topics surrounding inclusion and diversity. What do you mean by that? Sort of around inclusion and diversity. What do you speak about with regards to that?
Well, that's a great question. So actually today I will be speaking and supporting ACT Conservatory, American Conservatory Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Today they're doing a huge conference where they're bringing in theater makers and art makers around the country and leaders to talk about how there's like a lack of representation in leadership in theater. And so what I do is that I go to conferences or schools and I help facilitate conversation because, you know, it's so interesting right now. I think people are seeing across fields, across regardless of what field you're in, diversity is a buzzword, right? Like, how can we make our company more diverse? How can we, you know, be inclusive? But a lot of times people don't understand all the things that that entails. And that typically entails doing a lot of inner work and to kind of explore your own biases, right? And so that's the work that I've been trained to do as a social worker, is help lead those conversations and also help people explore their own biases in order to make a place more inclusive, right? And so a lot of my work has been primarily done with schools, but now I'm really excited about moving more and doing this work in places where art is done, because I think that, you know, artists and using artists is a great vehicle to make sure that many voices are heard, but often even in how the art is made or who's producing art, so many voices are being silenced due to lack of resources. So I'm really excited to kind of take my skills in facilitating conversations to different industries. And so that's what I'll be doing today.
Oh, that sounds really exciting. Yeah, I just think about the theater. I'm glad ACT is hosting this conference, because as a theater critic, I'm not included in the pool of media that these
right.
theaters, particularly the regional theaters, are interested in having the audiences I represent present. It's like, well, you know, we can
mm-hmm.
have black people on stage. We don't care if they're in the audience, you know? And
right.
so I don't know about, you know, I don't get invited to the major theaters. I don't get invited to their productions. I just sort of hear about
mm-hmm.
them, or I'd have to be, you know, sort of just following it. Whereas a long time ago, like when I first started covering theater, you know, I don't know, things were a little different, quite a bit different. I think media, the corporate aspect of media is really pronounced now, and it's in bed with the arts, and so the arts have a certain media machine that they plug into that supports the type of work that they're promoting. So let me ask Thomas if he fix his mic. If he's noticed anything like that around, you know, productions around promotion of Afro Solo.
Yes, that is true. And the whole corporate world around media and the arts has changed. There tends to be fewer critics to go out and see works, and there tends to be fewer articles written. In particular, it seemed like some of the not as large theater and arts organizations in the main press. So, yes, you are correct about that. Now, that is not to say there isn't some. And we often have to use alternative media, you know, social media, to help get our message out. If we relied on the main media to do that, we would be in serious trouble. So I'm very happy to hear that Luna is doing what she's doing and bringing her work around inclusion into our arena. In the past, there have been a number of periods where there's been discussion about colorblind casting and making the arts more accessible and representative of the communities. And some arts organizations do that much better than others. And that's even a double-edged sword in terms of casting different ethnicities for different roles. And one of the seminal problems around that, a number of years when it was really popular, The Wiz was presented, and there was a white Dorothy. And that was
what?
Part of their answer of colorblind casting.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's an odd example, but that did happen. So,
you could put a comedy about that.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Oh, that's funny. Why Dorothy?
Right.
Wow.
That's
interesting.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, but then I think, you know, Tom is about Afro solo, like Afro, you know. I mean, I know other people have been sporting Afros just like other people are sporting locks, right? But then you think about Afro solo, and I know, Thomas, for you to be able to sustain a program called Afro solo with, you know, focusing on black art and black artists, it's like, really? How did you do that? Given the funding, because you go after public funds, how did you what's your argument to say that an Afro solo in the 21st century is still vital and important and necessary in the arts community and in the conversation of who black people are in the United States of America, where, you know, democracy is the ideal?
Just thinking of what's happening right now in terms of Black Lives Matter. What Afro Solo is about us telling our stories from our point of view. And what I found is that our stories are human stories. It's about the human condition. It's about lives. And just listening to, you know, the two artists today talk about their lives, it's like, wow, we are very interesting. We're very informed. We're very knowledgeable. We have a lot to say, and we have different ways of saying that, whether it's a garment that one has on or telling a serious story from a humorous point of view. We have, in lots of ways, the world within us. So being able to express that artistically is something that I don't think would go out of style. Now, in terms of funders, you know, yes, it's been a labor of love, and it's been a passion of mine for us to be able to do this. It's a passion of mine to use the arts to tell our stories. I like theater, I like dance, I like music, spoken word. We'll have a wonderful visual art show. And then connecting these elements to everyday life. I'll be working with the school system on what we call a Black Family Day. I've worked with coordinating community health fairs. I will be doing some work around how to avoid or how to survive a police stop. I will be working with young black men on reversing the stereotypes of young black men and using the arts as a conduit to do some of these things. So you're right, it has been a struggle, and it continues to be a struggle. Laquila was saying that earlier about, you know, life in general. But we labor on, and we move forward. And that's why I'm excited, you know, just hearing the two artists talk today about their lives and the diversity of the three of us who are on the phone right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, Luna, back to you. I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, your work as a social worker, and are you still doing that work? Like, specifically, do you have, like, clients? Are you working in a school district? And how you moved from social work to comedy, or was comedy always there? And are you from the San Francisco Bay Area? Are you, you know, sort of, have you recently joined the Bay Area community as a person who lives here?
Yeah, I've recently joined. Well, I've been here for 5 years, but I'm originally from Louisiana, born and raised, Louisiana girl, still Southern.
What part of Louisiana?
I don't care what. So I grew up in a place called Opelousas. It's really the Zydeco capital of the world. I don't know if you're familiar with us. We're a small town.
Okay.
But it's still very near and dear to my heart, and I go back home often, but I made the Bay my home as well. And so I came out here. I was in grad school in New York City, and then came out here in 2011 and was working as a social worker with severely emotionally disturbed youth who experienced a lot of trauma. And so a lot of my work was working with different populations who experienced trauma. So I've worked with veterans, returning vets, and Holocaust survivors. And how I
stumbled into stand-up comedy was actually, so I grew up acting and I grew up performing in a lot of different ways. When I got here, I happened to see a couple of open mics one day, and I just walked in and started doing stand-up, and it was something that allowed me to really kind of cope with very hard days of being a social worker. So I kind of got into it that way as just a release, but then really found that I love stand-up comedy and have been performing it for 4 years now. And so my actual work right now, I'm not working as a social worker anymore. I'm moved and transitioned on to just be a consultant and kind of take all the years that I've had. And now I just kind of consult with different organizations if there are certain populations they really want to work with, if they want to increase their appeal for diversity, and I do that. And I work as that and as a writer also. So I did a couple of things this summer with Fusion. Because I'm from Louisiana, when the death of Alton Sterling happened, the untimely and unfortunate death and shooting death of Alton Sterling happened in Baton Rouge, I was very connected to it because I actually worked and lived in the community in which he was shot. And so I had already done some freelance work with Fusion, writing about Black people who support Donald Trump, and also writing around sexuality in the Black community. And so when that happened, I kind of told them, like, send me. I know this community. I know this area. And I actually went down there recently and covered Alton Sterling's funeral, and also really covered and explored side hustlers and how if you're an African-American man, you know, making a living, you know, selling something on the street, or that's not even illegal, right? Alton Sterling was selling CDs. We know Eric Garning was selling cigarettes, right? But just the presence of you being on the street as an African-American man is a danger in itself. And so we really kind of went down and covered that, as well as talked about the racial divide in Baton Rouge and how it's so segregated and how there's systemic racial oppression that's still going on in the city of Baton Rouge today, much like cities across the country. So I did some time there really exploring that, and I found that I really enjoy the work of journalism and the work of really talking to different people and making sure that the story that needs to be heard is heard.
Mhm. Yeah. So where is this published, the piece on Alton Sterling that you just described to us?
Yeah, so that's published on fusion.net. So Fusion is so Univision had a baby is kind of how I always describe it. So Univision and Disney had a baby, and they have a new network called Fusion, and so it's a TV station as well as a website, but if you look up Fusion.net. I have several pieces for them on there.
Oh, excellent. That's great. Yeah, I'm a New Orleans native, my whole family. So, interested in, and I know where Appaloosa is. okay. Yeah, nice. That's excellent. Wow, this is really great. Appreciate, Thomas, the way, you know, he sort of pulls these performances together, it's community building. And I don't know if that was the goal, Thomas, of the Afro Solo Arts Festival and Afro Solos in general, to build a stronger Black community here in the San Francisco Bay Area. However, that is definitely a residual outcome that is just simply phenomenal, because after we see, you know, these wonderful performances, and we know it's just an excerpt, you know, a lot of times people go on to develop the work into full evening performances, and then we go see you there too, and you have like an audience that's following you, which is really great. Was that the intent?
And that was part of it. My background's in psychology, and I have a master's in psychology, except I never wrote my thesis. And I did a lot of work with youth and.
Sorry, Thomas.
All right. So
yeah, you said
then
you
I got involved
lot,
with the.
You
because you did a lot of work with youth, you said?
I did a lot of work with youth, especially kids who are having, you know, difficulties. I work with youth who are having emotional problems within their families, and then youth who are having difficulty in terms of legal issues with them and their families. And this was, I'm from Nashville. This is an innovative program that we worked, that I worked in, where instead of expecting the youth to go to counseling, we went to their homes and worked with them on their own site where they were. And that's been interesting for me in terms of, excuse me a second, doing the work here in health, is that we, through Mo Magic and doing health fairs, is we often took the health fairs to the housing projects with the idea of taking the services to where people are, because sometimes depending on their lives and what's going on in their lives, they don't often make it to, you know, hospitals or clinics unless there's an emergency. And the idea was to provide these services and inform people of what was available before an emergency occurred. When I first started Afro Solo, some of those things were in my mind. At some of our first events, we would have community social service agencies be there to talk about their services, with the idea of people, with the people who came to the performances, could be informed of other services or people, or kind of get to know the community. So yes, community building was a part of it, and I see artists itself as a part of community building. One nice thing, that, as you mentioned, is getting to meet so many different artists from so many different realms of Black life. And when we first started Afro Solo, it was mostly the performance part that we're doing this weekend, the Black voices, and I called it glimpses of our lives, in the sense that each person can only give a glimpse of what Black life is like, but putting these different glimpses together, almost like a mosaic, you get a much fuller picture. And I've continued to think of us in terms of that idea of us telling our stories of who we are, where we came from, and where we're going, to give the world a glimpse of who we are. But it's been so important for me, and hearing our audience talk, to have us talk to each other. You know, sometimes after a performance, audience members will come up to me and just talk about the diversity of within our culture, and that there might be something around, you know, Christian life. There may be something around gay life. There may be something around civil rights, all in the same program. So just bringing these different worlds together.
Nice, yeah. So another one of the guests that sort of rounds out the conversation in the program is Antoine Hunter. Maybe tell us a little bit about Antoine, since he's not able to join us today. And then tell us about Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett. And did you know him, Thomas?
Yes, I did get to know him very briefly. And part of my work for the piece that I'm doing is finding out a little bit more about who he was and how he came to be who he was, in the sense that when I first started Afro Solo in the performances in 94, one of the things my advisor recommended is that I go out into the community and talk to people and tell them who I am and what I was hoping to do. And he was one of the people that I reached out, and he reached back. And part of the story that I'm going to tell is how he reached back and how that influenced me, and it influenced my desire to find out more about him. He has a very fascinating history in terms of, as you said, being a psychologist, being a medical doctor, being a publisher. He ran for governor. He also was very influential in lots of people's lives. In some ways, he was a fisherman of people. There are some controversial parts of his life, too. He was involved with, you know, Jim Jones, for people who know a little bit about that story. So I'll be, you know, giving a glimpse of his life in 15 or 20 minutes. The other person who's going to be on the bill is Antoine Hunter. Antoine is fascinating to me, and I've kind of watched him over the years, and that he's a dancer, but he's also deaf. He's a deaf dancer. And he's become very well renowned for working in the deaf community around movement and dance. A couple of weeks ago, here in San Francisco, at the 24th Street Performance Space, there was an that there was a Bay Area International Deaf Dance Festival. And I was able to attend that. And there were deaf dancers from Hungary, Puerto Rico, New York, here in the Bay Area. And it's just a whole different, you know, kind of culture, kind of world in some ways. But Antoine's big push is that, hey, deaf people can dance, get to know us. We're alive. We're here. We're good people. We're special people. And we want to be a part of the larger community. I'm fascinated because I don't know if there are a lot of our audience members who have seen him, know of him, or even know about deaf dancers. So bringing him aboard is part of what I like to do, and that is tell as much of the whole story about us through art as I possibly can.
Right, yeah, yeah. So in our closing 10 minutes or so, I wanted to see if Aquila, if you found a poem, and Luna, if you'd like to share anything, you know, that you've developed over your stand-up career up to now. And Thomas, you wanted to give a little snippet of Dr. Goodlett's voice, you know,
well,
so to tease folks.
One of the things,
and
that,
then before you start talking, Thomas, if you all could like mute your mic when you're not speaking, because we're having, I'm hearing like conversation and other types of things in the background,
okay.
and it's going into the recording. Okay, all right, go ahead, Thomas.
I was just going to, oops, you know, now that I'm 150, I lost my train of thought.
Oh no. Oh, darn.
What I was going to say is that with Dr. Goodlett, I'm not going to try to become him. I'm going to tell his story,
okay.
Sort of a lecture, sort of performance, and also just repeating a number of the stories that I've heard. When people find out I'm doing a story about Dr. Goodlett, there are so many people that had so many interactions with him that I'm kind of piecing a number of things together. And I had mentioned to the artist earlier, too, is that I'm inviting a lot of young people to this performance. So anyone who's young who would like to come, I'm very interested in having young people know about the lives of us artists, but also the lives of the kind of work we do and the people that we showcase.
Nice, nice. Okay, cool. Aquila or Luna, do you want to share something from your repertory?
Sure. So this poem is called She. She was made from a piece of you. One rib plus one woman equals heaven. She's homie, lover, and your best friend. Has the perfect blend of sugar, spice, and all things nice when she wanna be. She has undeniable beauty that's oozing out of her pores, etched in purple, gold, and the finest jewels, bathed in perfume. The sweetest smells linger in the air when she passes by. With a twinkle in her eye and a pep in her step, she's found him and knows exactly what to do. She sees him in the distance and longs to make him rise. Rise up and take his place beside her. Rise with her. Writing the perfect love story full of mystery, drama, romance, and comedy. There's such beauty all over the place. Kinetic energy, authenticity, electricity can leave one breathless, speechless, from her tender caress and nothing less. She's a queen. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Nice.
Very
yeah,
nice.
That was beautiful, Aquila. That's really nice.
Thanks.
That was beautiful. Yeah, that's one of your your classics.
Yeah.
How does it feel to have classics and you're so young, right?
Yeah, I really like that one because, you know, I'm always trying to describe how I feel about, I guess they call it gender pronouns. I'm really starting to learn a lot about all these different things that are revealed out into the world today. Gender binary, gender pronoun, whatever. So I really wanted to, like, express what I felt about those two things and how I fit into the picture and how other people fit into it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's gorgeous.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Luna?
Yeah, well, I'll just leave you with a little one-liner joke. Basically, just want to share with you and all your listeners that I've been feeling so good lately because I just lost 15 pounds, and I want to just be excited to share it with you all about that. And I lost 15 pounds on a brand new diet called Broke, Just Being Broke. My friends back home were like, how do you stick to that diet? And I say, I live in the Bay Area, so it's hard for me to buy food. So I'll leave you guys with that.
Wow. So with the humor, it's also thought-provoking because you think about all the people that are broke living in or existing in, you know, what is it, being underhoused in the San Francisco Bay Area. We think about the encampments and people living in doorways and people who've just lost their jobs and all they have are their vehicles to live in. I want to have a question on redirect with regards to the joke.
Yeah.
So is that how, humor often, in the black community historically is a way to present things, issues that are not, make people uncomfortable, but you laugh and then like, oh my God, really? Like, oh, really? Is that sort of the tradition you're also sort of a part of, Luna? Because it sounds like it just from what you left us with there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's part of my tradition, and I believe in that. And this is the other thing I wanted to say about, as a social worker or as someone who goes out and talks to people about things, like I've been in rooms and tried to talk to people about issues of poverty or homelessness or racism, right? And their arms are looking at me with a stern face and their arms are crossed. But when I tell a joke about it, one, they don't know that I'm talking about it until after the joke is over. And then they meet me with a little bit more less defensiveness. And through laughing, I think they're able to kind of hear another story. It's all about, going back to what Thomas said earlier, it's all about storytelling and presenting the human story, right? And so I think through humor, that's when people learn, oh, you have the same basic issues as me, and we're going through the same things. And humor is really just a way to connect with someone else, with someone else's empathy, right? Because when you're laughing, it's just like, oh, I can identify with that in some way. And so I think that's really how I feel like humor is one of the most powerful weapons and really connecting with people.
That was very well said. Very well said.
Right. Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you.
And Thomas, we have a couple of minutes, like two. And my next guest hasn't joined us yet. And I know, all of you all have spoken, about ancestors. And I know, Thomas, you always invite them into the room, into the space. And for those who might not know my work, we have a African Ancestors of the Middle Passage ritual that we have, commemoration we have every we host every year, and this is our 21st annual Ma'afa commemoration, and it's in October at
kidding.
Ocean Beach.
21
and,
years?
Yeah, it's been 21 years now, yeah.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And so, the connection to our ancestors, you speak about humor and the legacy of humor in a world that's not funny, for black people. It's still not funny. It's not funny yet. There's no such thing as just laughter that's, not connected to some issue when you're walking around in bodies that look like ours. I was wondering if maybe in closing, if, we could all sort of just, maybe talk a little bit about our ancestors since, we've got Dr. Goodlett in the studio with us and we have your friend Stretch
you know, in the studio with us, Aquila, you know, who had you, you know, try your hand at hosting a comedy, you know, a comedy, a poetry series about black love and erotica and, you know, seeing ourselves in different aspects, you know, but loving and sharing in a way that perhaps, you know, is not necessarily conversant yet. And then your work with, you know, the different ways we show up in different sort of settings and places, and the places where we are absent, and people, you know, maybe should start asking themselves, well, why are we the only ones here? Like, is something wrong with that, you know? When people look around and see all whiteness, right? It's like, where are the black folks? And, you know, like, not thinking it as normal to be in a space where it's there's nothing but the same thing there. So anyway, maybe we could go around and talk about our ancestors.
Mhm. Oh, man. So, you know, just hearing the word ancestor, I thought it was really someone who was really old and, you know, whatever. I actually didn't really understand what an ancestor meant until a lot of people that I cared about started passing away. And this is like within the last, let's see, probably 2-3 years, it seems like people that I know or I'm connected to are passing away in the month of April, month of March, like every year since for the last 3 years. And for me, I have a hard time when passing and death and transition. It really affects me. And so I'm still in pain and hurting for one of my mentors. When I was about to do the Sideshow Radio on After Hours Radio, I was being mentored by someone named Wesley Burton. He was killed in a hit and run accident when he was on his way home from Sideshow Radio last year. And it was a blow. It was a major blow for all of us because he was a family man. He was just really passionate, and he was excited about radio, excited about, you know, just teaching and helping others. So I definitely still have a hard time with folks that pass. And so I the pain, the things that I feel, sometimes I get into a fetal position because I don't have any words. And, I definitely use my poetry, use the performance to be able to heal myself because pain sometimes is hard. It's hard to deal with pain. And so I do appreciate the comedy because we do need comedy. I agree. We need to have a way of release to be able to heal ourselves. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you to the ancestors, and I definitely still miss all of you.
Right. I was talking to a new friend of mine the other day about how important it is to kind of keep our ancestors in mind in our day-to-day lives and really look to them continuously for inspiration. And so that's something that I do. And I still have so much to learn about the people who came before me and the things, the contributions that they've made that have made my life easier as a performer, as an activist, as an artist, as all of that. And so I've been thinking a lot about my ancestors within my family lately and my great-grandparents and the things that they've gone through. And it's both of my grandparents my grandparents, I should say, grew up not really knowing their parents on both sets of my family. So I think that there is a real kind of line that's kind of been severed where there's like a lot of history that's been lost, but at the same time I've been really feeling it lately, and I feel like sometimes I believe in kind of showing reverence to your ancestors in different ways, and I think that I hope that the work that I'm doing is kind of furthering the work that they've done before. And I think especially in the black community that the severance that happened in my family is something that we've all felt at some point in time, either because of slavery or other kinds of tragedies that have happened in our lives. And I think connecting to community, connecting to family, connecting to some sort of past is so important. And, you know, I really appreciate you holding space for this conversation right now and bringing up our ancestors. And, you know, I just hope that what I do honors them.
Thank you, Donna.
Yeah, I can relate to that also. Just hoping that I live up to some extent to the expectation, the hope, the desire that my parents in particular would have had for me. Sometimes I worry about that. But I also think in terms of what our ancestors went through and how some of them thrived, even though some of their conditions were a lot worse than ours. And I say that in the sense that my great-grandfather owned some land in Tennessee back in the 1800s. And it was through his insistence that my family not sell that land, that he willed it to a couple of his, four of his sons. Some of the land was sold, but my father and my grandfather would not sell a portion of that land. We've gone through some legal entities to reclaim that land. So for my family now to have some land that my great-grandfather owned and bought, it's like when he was a slave. He was a slave, and he ran away from slave and fought in the Civil War. Just honoring his history, my parents' history, even thinking about Dr. Goodlett, having a street named after him. And I still wonder, how did these people do this during their generations? And what can I do now that will kind of help us move forward a little bit? And I've just found the arts to be my mechanism to try to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Ashe. Yeah, okay. The words have power. And folks need to get out to the Barrio Theater at the African American Art and Culture Complex this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 762 Fulton Street in San Francisco's Fillmore District, to be in the space for these wonderful performers doing solo work that's going to really, honor just the Black experience, particularly, you know, with the theme of our stories, our lives. And
the overall theme this year is Black Matters. Black Matters, yes. And I know you've probably mentioned that, but I just want to mention that people can get information from our website, which is www.afrosolo.org, or they can call me, 415-771-2376.
Right, yeah.
Or go on Facebook and look for Afro Solo Theater Company.
Right, and then Aquila and Luna, I know you have a website. Luna, Aquila, I'm not sure if you do, but Luna, give your website.
Sure, mine is lunaisamerica.com, so very easy to remember. And you can also follow me on Twitter, Luna is America, as well.
And for me, right now, social media is the best way for me to be able to connect, network, and get my work out there. I am working on putting together a platform that's best for me, probably working with WordPress or some other type entities. But, yes, definitely Facebook. I'm probably going to have an Instagram pretty soon. But, yeah, that's the best. And Twitter as well. And it's under my name, Aquila, Aquieioa.
Okay, excellent. Super. All righty. Well, thank you so much, and I hope the conference goes well, Luna, that you're facilitating. And I hope
you
all have a good rest of the day. Thank you so much for joining us, and look forward to this weekend to seeing your shows.
Thank you very much, Wanda.
Awesome.
Look forward to seeing you.
Oh,
you're awesome.
Well. You take good care. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mampuru zedu kuzaze Nagwa mane kufama
a wonderful song. It's called Africans and Americans, and Val Sarant gave it to me. So I'm not sure where he is in the song, but I'm sure he's on the song. And anyway, you can get in touch with him for the details. Wanted to let you know about another wonderful event happening beginning tonight. It's the it's a fifth annual New Works Festival. Three girls tour. Let me look at the details here. Three Girls Theater Company is presenting this wonderful celebration of women and the body politic in 2016, and it's a free festival. Begins tonight, and it can go. It continues through Sunday, August 28th, and it's at Thick House, 1695 18th Street in San Francisco, and it's free, but tickets are recommended. So you can go to the website for girlstheater.org /2016 New Works Festival, and they also have a Facebook site. And at this particular festival tonight at 7:30, there's a stage reading of Three Girls Theater Salon Series finalists. Country Matters by Lee Bradley, let's see. On Tuesday is a stage reading in the Salon Series, Slice by Robin Bradford, and then on Wednesday there's going to be a Women Are the Body Politic, and I think it's going to be. Is there a panel? It's an evening of comedy, interviews, performance, and music. And special guests include comedian Debbie Durst, executive director of Emerge California, Kimberly Ellis, and improv artist Kimberly McLean, and more. And then Thursday, August 25th, 7:30, Repo Rights, Women and the Body Politic, short play readings, monologues, and performance pieces centering on women's reproductive rights and bodily autonomy, raising awareness of the work being done by NARAL Pro-Choice America, and is presented in collaboration with Repro Rights Theater, and with special guest Amy Everett, executive produced by Cal NARAL, N-A-R-A-L. And then Friday at the 26th, 7:30, Best of Les Rights 2016, and this is the third Best of Festival program of this popular series, short humorous pieces on the body politic from LBT perspective, co-created by Three Girls Theater resident playwright Marjorie Crittman and author playwright activist Jewel Gomez. And then Saturday, the 27th, from 1 to 6, Three Girls Theater at Thick House. It's a full afternoon of readings, conversation, and partying from 1 to 4, double feature performances of the two Salon Series finalists, Slice by Robin Bradford at 1 p.m. and Country Matters by Lee Bradley at 3 p.m. And 4:30 to 5:15, talk back at the Three Girls Theater panel. Three Girls Theater playwrights lead an audience discussion of the issues in bringing women's politics to the stage. 5:15, festival artist reception, and a reception honoring the women artists exhibiting in the lobby art show. And then Sunday, 28th at 3 p.m., Girl Rights Performance Day. And it's a unique afternoon performance of original monologues written by the teenage participants in the 2016 Girl Rights Dramatic Writing Workshop, directed by Three Girls Theater resident playwright Susie Allen, in collaboration with the Hunters Point Bayview Foundation Youth Services Project. Teen actors will be performing works by Three Girls Theater teen writers. Stay for refreshments and conversation with the writers, actors, and audience members. That should be really awesome. So throughout the week, there is a lobby art exhibition of works by female visual artists that reflect the festival theme. And this year's exhibit will again be curated by the San Francisco mixed media artist Denise Doyle. So it sounds pretty awesome. And again, you can visit three girlstheater.org for all of the information that I just shared with you, and to, you know, make sure you're in the house for one of those evenings, if not all of them. All righty. So we are going to continue playing a little more music, and going to play something else that from Val Sarant. This one's called D-Day Africa, and we're going to close out probably with D-Day Africa. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of Wanda's Picks. And we will be back on Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific time. Peace and blessings.
Yeah. your sunshine. So